Blog Talk Radio.
Brought to you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the Ooze.
Looks like you got four big dicks in the room, so who's gonna fucking slap this shit down first?
It basically, and then focus on the problem at hand. You're not dealing with the emotion, you're dealing with the issue.
Richard, it's been a big, long-winded speech to all pass this up today for you gentlemen, but unfortunately, I'm somewhat bankrupt.
Now onto our show.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm T.C. Downing, a.k.a. Beast Zeno, and with me on the line are actually two of the three co-hosts, both Doug Fool and Zach Black. What's going on, guys?
Hey, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Good morning, Vietnam!
Good morning, boys.
Yeah. It is kind of like a war zone on your end, isn't it, Beast?
It was, but the chat room's all open now, and I'm sliding in the door unscathed, man. Yesterday's events did not reoccur.
Booyah!
Well, Beast, we know you're the backdoor man. You know, that's no secret, so we forgive you.
Yeah, someone's going to go in the exit, you know what I mean?
That's right, man. Someone's going to play in the mud.
That's right. All right, so
I had a bit of a close call last night, speaking of which, really quickly, had a 24-hour flu. Fortunately, I slipped it off. I was like, oh, shit, that better not affect me for the use tomorrow. Fuck that. So, yeah. So now I'm glad to be here, too, gentlemen.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Good to talk to you, man.
Wow. Sorry, guys. I'm actually just sitting here scratching my fucking head trying to figure out why there's toilet paper on the front page of Sin.
Why there's what? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Why there's toilet paper on the front page of Sin. Avengers attempt at comedy.
Is that a joke, or what do you mean?
Yeah, Avengers attempt at comedy. It's, he's funnier when he's not trying to be funny.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a parody, but yeah. I thought it was worth posting, man, because, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that.
I just kind of popped on the page to see what was going on Satanic International Network. And the first thing I saw was a big, bald, LeVay-looking motherfucker.
Yeah.
We all know.
You're absolutely right, though. Avengers, his best comedy is when he's being serious. We're going to get to the bottom of that in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I've noticed that with certain comedians, too, with, like, say, Norm MacDonald. It's like their best stuff is not the stuff that's planned out. It's the stuff that's improvised right there at the moment.
It's not quite what I meant, but yeah.
Right, no, I know. I know what you were going for, but yeah. I'd just right. Leave it to me to fuck things up.
Oh, no, that's okay, man.
We'll get to the bottom of Avengers Satanus in 2 weeks. He's scheduled, man. He's going to be on the news, High Priest Satanus, and he's going to explain why he thinks he is the Messiah.
Why he thinks what?
Why he thinks he is the Messiah.
Avengers
Satanus thinks he's Jesus Christ. So we'll get to the bottom of that in 2 weeks.
Oh yeah, we were talking about that. Weren't there also two other people that were going to join?
I don't know, but I'm interested in High Priest Satanus because he has a sense of humor and he's intelligent. But most of us still don't understand why he thinks he's the Messiah. And I can't put words in his mouth. I'd like him to explain it.
That sounds like a groovy idea, there, man.
I try. I do. Well, I do something once in a while.
Right on. So I guess today we'll skip starting with the Your Mama joke since Dark Fool seems to be running a little dry this morning.
Dry? I got, well, yeah, kind of. I've got coffee, I've got Monster. I'm ready.
You're ready, huh? right, awesome. Let's talk about some satanic, some psychic vampires, what they are, and why they do what they do.
Sounds like a great idea, man. And I have everything all queued up. If time will allow, gentlemen, if I could read some excerpts from the Satanic Bible, from that that chapter that says, "Not all vampires suck blood."
Okay. You got the floor.
Okay. Now, I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to read a couple paragraphs just to start us in. And "Not all vampires suck blood." It starts out with the sixth satanic statement that says, "Satanism represents responsibility to the responsible instead of concern for psychic vampires. Many people who walk the earth practice the fine art of making others feel responsible and even indebted to them without cost. Satanism observes these leeches in their true life. Psychic vampires are individuals who drain others of their vital energy. This type of person can be found in all avenues of society. They fill no useful purpose in our lives and are neither love objects nor true friends. Yet we feel responsible to the psychic vampire without knowing why. If you think you may be the victim of such a person, there are a few simple rules which will help you form a decision. Is there a person you often call or visit, even though you really don't want to because you know you will feel guilty if you don't? Or do you find yourself constantly doing favors for one who doesn't come forward and ask but hints? Often the psychic vampire will use reverse psychology, saying, 'Oh, I couldn't ask you to do that,' and you in turn insist upon doing it. The psychic vampire never demands anything of you. That would be far too presumptuous. They simply let their wishes be known in subtle ways, which will prevent them from being considered pests. They wouldn't think of imposing and are always content and willing to accept their lot without the slightest complaint outwardly. Their sin is not of commission, but of omission. It's what they don't say and not what they do say." Okay, I could keep going. That's the last paragraph, but you get the point.
So can you paraphrase that for us?
Okay, to paraphrase, I would say, after that long-winded speech, I would say that a psychic vampire is somebody who makes you feel indebted to them without, outwardly expressing so.
Okay. And, Zach, do you have an opinion as to what a psychic vampire is?
Yeah, I do. I do, man. I would also classify psychic vampires as coattail riders, man. People that just, hang on your coattails and ride on your success or, your attention. They're basically attention seekers. That's how I've come across them anyway. And if you feed them, they're kind of like, of course, the Satanic Bible is written in, 69? I would classify them as trolls nowadays is what they are. There's a broader definition, but I would definitely call them trolls, and I think LaVey probably would too, if he was still alive.
Right. Okay. I have a little bit of a variation from both of you gentlemen. Not that I'm going to argue with either of your definitions, because I think that both of you guys have very, very valid points as to what a psychic vampire is. But I would say that a psychic vampire is somebody who incites some kind of emotional charge in you for the purpose of their own gratification. People who, like for instance, people who perpetuate or instigate drama to gain some kind of a benefit, whether it be personal entertainment or self-satisfaction, that's a psychic vampire in my mind. In addition to this, you could use the current prototype of her, or at least the current proposal of what her persona is to demonstrate a psychic vampire. Absolutely, it's somebody that when you're interacting with, you just feel drained when you walk away from them. You're just like, oh my God, this person just sucked like all this energy out of me. That's
absolutely. And you know what, if I could add to it a little bit, there's also another one I want to get into later on. There's the occult metaphysical aspect of a psychic vampire, somebody who actually practices, you know, on a magical level, the art of draining somebody as well. But that's a different story altogether. I think LaVey's application of what a psychic vampire is more applicable and worth mentioning.
Okay.
Well, you know, speaking of LaVey, if you notice, there's a lot of people that came up to slander and put down LaVey after he was dead and can't defend himself. And a lot of people who have been sucking him and riding his coattails. I'm not sure if that actually classifies a psychic vampire, but yeah, they're definitely coattail riders, man. And, you know, it's like, give respect for, you know, respect is due, you know. It's like, what do you have to gain from this? Oh, I know what you have to gain. You're trying to promote your own brand of bullshit. That's right. You're trying to put a new spin on this.
Right. Oftentimes, vampires will put their own spin on things and kind of rewrite history to suit their needs.
For sure.
Well, let me ask you guys something. Last week, we were talking about, maybe not last week, but recently, but we've been talking about professional victims. Do you guys think that professional victims can sometimes also be psychic vampires?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, playing the victim card is what they thrive on. If they're downtrodden, if they're beaten, if it gets them attention, I mean, there's obviously other variations of a psychic vampire, but that is definitely a huge psychic vampire trait.
All right. I totally agree.
Now, I forget what we were actually talking about last week, but it seems like what we were talking about last week was also applicable with this as well. I'm trying to remember, what was the subject on Saturday last week, Matt?
Saturday was Spiritual Pipe Dreams Part 2.
Okay, so then, no, this doesn't. I guess it was specifically just the Professional Victim Association that I was looking for.
Okay. Now, also, gentlemen, if there's a lot that I'd like to contribute to, because I wanted to do this topic particularly because I've dealt with psychic vampires all my life, and I think, you know, I owe it to LaVey, because this is like, when I read the Satanic Bible, he gave me the best advice I've ever received on how to handle these people, and in fact, with my own experience, I could actually build upon some of what LaVey has talked about.
Right on.
Let's hear it. What was that?
Okay. Well, there's a couple things with regard to LaVey. He gave not just the definition of what a psychic vampire is, but he also gave, you know, advice on how to deal with them. And some of that advice is right there in the same chapter. The best advice is the art of playing dumb. And I think, you know, as to deal with a psychic vampire, that is the best thing that you could do, is just play dumb, play ignorant to their game. At the same time, kind of manipulate it from the side. And there are other ways which LaVey hints at. And, you know, I've picked up on those hints and used them successfully. Some of them were written in other books besides the Satanic Bible, like how to take advantage of those who think they're taking advantage of you. You know, it's kind of like, you know, fighting fire with fire. You know, in order to fight a devil, you have to be a devil. It's becoming a psychic vampire in order to out-vampirize the vampire.
Yeah, you know, man, I have to agree with that, man. It's like if someone's draining you of your energy, the best thing to do is to stop feeding them. That's the first thing to do. That's, well, in my opinion, anyway.
Absolutely.
And, it seems to work. If you feed them and you keep giving them attention, they're gonna cling on to you even longer, man. They're like fleas. I think Eagle Diablo mentioned this in one of his videos about fleas, and I think that's kind of along the same lines as what we're talking about. Yeah, that's what the deal with them is, to not deal with them, is to ignore them. But if it's somebody like a family member where, you know, you have some sort of emotional attachment to, then you're kind of fucked. You know, it's a little bit different. You have to play that card a little bit, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, man. In fact, I have several examples of family members who, you know, I have personal family members that are psychic vampires, without a doubt. But there is, I mean, to build on what LaVey spoke of, is that, you know, I've been able to out-vampirize them by beating them at their own game. You know, for example, like there's another concept that LaVey talked about where he says saying no but making it sound like a yes. And I've utilized that technique as well where, you know, the psychic vampire will, like, call upon you and they'll get a little bit mad if you can't, you know, be there to, you know, for their need right there at that moment. But if you can make it sound as if, you know, maybe in the future there's a possibility that they might be able to come back to you again, they'll still hold on thinking that they are still in control when, in fact, it's you manipulating them right back. They can't see it.
That's fair enough. Now, let's actually just for a minute step aside and add the idea of what they are and how to deal with them, but let's look at what it is that actually motivates them. I'm inclined to think that it's the main benefit is attention.
Yes.
I'm looking for something that transcends each of these definitions that we've described at this point. And attention seems to be on each of the lists. Is there other traits that you guys think maybe the motives?
Well, to be honest, aside from attention, I'd say a little bit more broader would be emotion. You know, they'll feed off of emotion, whether it's negative or positive. Same thing with attention, whether it's a negative attention or positive attention, which is interconnected.
Right on. Okay. Zach, do you have any ideas? Or?
No, not really.
No, not really? All right. I'm always curious as to, you know, what's really gained, because just attention alone, there are ways of getting attention without actually having to be a, you know, a psychic vampire. And I don't think... I don't think it's necessarily them struggling for control of the situation or of a person. I don't think they're necessarily intentionally manipulating something. They just seem to have some kind of a intellectual or emotional shortcoming.
Right, and
yeah,
that's
I
actually. Totally
oh, go ahead, Zach. That's all right. Sorry, man. I totally agree with that, man. I think that they're. What they're looking for is some sort of emotional gratification. They're looking for meaning in their life. They're looking for, they want to be stimulated, you know? I mean, you know, you put your finger up someone's ass, you know, that way. But, I mean, they're looking for some sort of stimulation emotionally. But at the bottom line of it, it's not necessarily specifically attention-seeking, but it is, they're looking for somebody to give them an emotional coin.
Right,
and
right.
Also in that same chapter, I'm going to paraphrase this time rather than give a long-winded speech. They're attracted to people that are well-adjusted in life, that are pleased with their job, happily married, that sort of thing, in order to feed upon. So people that are well-adjusted, they lack that in their life, and so they tend to gravitate towards that type of person.
So to me, the reasoning for that is pretty obvious.
Yeah, people who are down want to surround themselves with other people that are down, and they want to bring you down too. And it's company among friends, right?
Well, misery, but not just. I'm sorry, go ahead, B.
Well, I was just going to say, misery loves company. That that kind of summarizes what Zach was just saying.
Right, and. But I also see that they could do the opposite. Like, let's say, for example, how many people have gotten starstruck before? Like, if you have, if you see somebody that's more successful in their life, somebody that you kind of idolize, you know, that's a form of psychic vampirism too, with the fact that you want to spend more time with them, you want to be hanging around them, you want what they want because you don't have that in your own life. So instead of, not only is it a misery seeks company among peers, but it's also misery seeks company and wants to get some of that, you know, a little piece of the pie that they are lacking in their life, so they'll go to people more successful.
I am going to, if you guys don't mind, I'm going to share a little bit of, a little portion of my life. There was a friend that I had growing up, and we were real tight. We used to do everything together that would get us into trouble, all kinds of stuff. As we got older, he moved away for a short period of time, and moved back. He was not successful in his quest out to. He was not successful in his quest outward to, you know, I had to come back, and he came and he stayed with me. And while he was staying with me, he was having difficulty landing a job. And at that point in time, I was buying and selling rare coins and jewelry. That was what I did for a living. I worked for myself. I ran ads in the newspaper, and people would call me to come look at stuff that wasn't necessarily pawn shop valuable. Well, it was pawn shop valuable, but it was stuff that the pawn shops were known not to pay as much for. And so I'd come out and look at these things and make some money off of it just by offering them a little less than I knew I could get for it. So I started teaching them how to do this. And what had happened in the meantime, I got married. What kind of started to strike me as weird is this guy was always like needing my help doing everything. I had to show him how to buy, sell, and trade. I had to show him, you know, how to successfully spend more than one night with a girl. I know this sounds, you know, kind of strange, but it got weird. Like, there was a period where I came home and an entire outfit of mine that I knew was hanging in my closet was on his ass when I got home, which I really thought was strange. And then as I got closer to him, I realized he was also wearing my cologne. And so I made the comment to him that I hoped he didn't have my boxers on as well. So he kind of thought that was funny and would laugh it off and everything, but it turned out later that he actually ended up screwing my wife. And beyond that, once that happened, when I actually found out about that, he managed to empty my bank account too before he disappeared into the woodwork. Later on, about 2 years later, I found him in a newspaper. He had attempted to rob somebody and kill them, and he failed miserably at both, and so he was in jail for 30 years. So, But, you know, that is my idea of the ultimate psychic vampire.
Damn. Yeah, man. You know, I got to tell you, there's variations. I've never come across anything that extreme, but there are also variations of psychic vampires, which I want to discuss, but Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah, now you're talking 12 years ago at this point, man, but, you know, still, it was kind of eye-opening because I had always... you know, called people who were just a little bit of a drain psychic vampires, but this dude was the full blood sucker. He would empty you if he could.
Wow, dude, I don't know where to go from there. I mean, I've got other stories, but I think that one takes the cake, my friend.
Well, I'd be interested in hearing any other stories. I'm looking real sick. Looks like Zach fell off the line. Zach, if you're listening on the air, I'm walking outside to have a cigarette, so you're going to have to wait a couple minutes before you get to come back on. So, all right, well, in the meantime, Matt, please, if you've got a couple stories, please share it.
Oh, yeah, well, as far as psychic vampires go, like I said, I've dealt with them all my life. In fact, you know, LeVay, again, paraphrasing, in that same chapter, talks about religious organizations as well as individuals. And, yeah, I mean, as far as religion goes, within the right-hand path and within Christianity in particular, what I've experienced is there's a huge amount of psychic vampires that are in Christianity. Huge amount. Because they want to make you feel indebted. And they want to make you feel like as if they're doing something good for you, like, you know, like, oh, I'll pray for you or that sort of thing. Which kind of makes you feel in their debt. And my own parents have been actually the best. It's funny, they're psychic vampires. At the same time, they've been the best example of you know, how to deal with people like that. So, I mean, the best training I got was from them. And, you know, I guess to that extent, I owe them a bit of gratitude, you know, for the experience. But in particular, with one situation where I turned the game around was, like, for years, even though I was a Satanist, I was actually going to church and running the soundboards for them. And in return, you know, I was, like, going to college on their dime. I got a new car through them, bought and paid for, not a dime out of my pocket. And at one point, I was able, just by playing their little game, I was able to go to Virginia and meet a few Satanists, if you catch my drift.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
I'm curious. You're talking about financial gain now at this point. You being able to derive financial gain from a psychic vampire. Do you think that psychic vampires typically also go for some kind of financial gain? Like, for instance, the guy that fucked my wife at that point in time, he obviously got a financial gain as well as he got to, you know, literally put on my shoes for a couple of days.
I'm absolutely glad you picked up on that because I was trying to lead into that earlier. Yeah, financial gain is another thing that they look for. Not just a lot of times if they are a professional psychic vampire, they won't just go for the. They'll try to go for the long term, but they won't know exactly how to get there. Psychic vampirism, from what I've seen, only works in the short term. You know, it's there, it's used up, it's gone, and then they have to find another victim. It's a cycle because these people are secretly, in some way, shape, or form, addicts.
To what are they addicted to?
Well, it could be anything. It's an addictive personality. Like it could be an addiction to food. It could be an addiction to drink. It could be an addiction to, you know, anything. It's just the fact that cycle appears in their life and. You know, and it kind of transfers in other areas. And there are some people, I mean, I'm kind of like going all over the map. This is one of those topics that I enjoy and I have a lot of experience with. So, I mean, I'm sharing right and left. There are also some people that have addictions that aren't as severe. There are variations of psychic vampires. Like, I have people that I would consider friends, you know, that do fulfill balances here and there, but also have vampire traits. That aren't completely, you know, I think a complete psychic vampire is somebody who drains and gives nothing back. But there are sometimes where people give back, which adheres to the balance factor, but still carry a little bit of vampire traits.
Okay. All right. Now, how do you think the psychic vampire manifests in a work environment?
Oh, okay. In a work environment. See, that's tricky, man. I'd say in a work environment, they would do things like pass around a collection thing for somebody. Like, oh, you know, so-and-so had an operation, or my mother is sick, or my wife just had a baby. We can't afford rent this month. And they would probably, like, carry around a collection plate, you know what I mean, to help out for the month. Or they would get people to feel, like, they would get bosses to feel sorry for them. In order to, I don't know, get more days off or, you know, get a raise, that sort of thing.
Okay, that makes sense. Real quick here while I'm thinking about this, Matt. This is a discussion edition, so anybody who's got any stories they want to share about psychic vampires or if you think you have a unique situation that we haven't mentioned that psychic vampires manifest in, please give us a call, 347-989-1371. Now, coming back to it, I think sometimes the psychic vampire at work can run through scenarios where they're constantly putting you in a situation where you have to cover both your ass and their own.
Yeah.
For instance, you know... you guys are working, whatever, you got an hour to the end of your shift and you've used all your 15-minute breaks, but both of you guys agree you want a cigarette. He will insist that he gets to go first so that, you know, he can be sure that he's going to get his cigarette in, even though it's potentially that the supervisor might come by and he'll have to cover his ass. But you can bet your ass off once it's time for you to go, once it's time for you guys to, when switch off, if the supervisor comes back, he's not covering your ass. He's going to, throw his thumb up and say he's in back, and just kind of set you up for there. That's definitely one situation right there. I think this is somebody who gets a little bit of a thrill in putting you in this situation where you don't know that there's nobody watching your back.
Right, and then we'll try to justify it to you to get you to do it again, because they're in that addictive mindset, in that cycle. They want to keep you under their cycle, under their control.
Right, absolutely. Well, I don't necessarily think that it's under their control. They just, the koi dog always comes back to the people that feed it. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not so much about control as it is about knowing where the food is. Knowing where they can get that next high. Actually, we got a rare treat coming on here, man. I'm going to put Sean Hartnell here on the line.
All right.
Sean, you're on the news.
Am I on? Hello.
Welcome.
What's up?
You've got mail.
What's up, man?
Go ahead. I'll jump in.
Okay, first of all, for those of you who don't know Sean Hartnell, this man I speak highly of, because Sean, you've done a lot of studying into human behavior and human psychology, and I think you'd be a great addition to today's topic.
Well, thank you.
he's not calling you a psychic vampire, Sean, don't worry.
Exhibit A.
Sean, what do you think of everything we've discussed so far?
Well, I think exactly what is being drained by a psychic vampire hasn't been made clear. You've said money and women, and that's just standard sociopath stuff. Does a vampire...
What do they gain? Is that what you're asking?
What do they drain?
What do they drain? Really, honestly, I think they drain your energy. That's really what it is. They drain the calm, collective nature that you might normally have. They create a stressful situation on you. I don't know what it is that it can actually be described as. That you're losing, but you're definitely losing something.
Go ahead, Sean.
I think it's overall vitality. I mean, a bomb can make you lose your peace of mind, but it's not even alive.
Right. So, okay, vitality is definitely, I guess that's probably the word that I was looking for when I said they drain your energy, because it does. It's tiring. It wears you out. You don't want to deal with it anymore. You let them have whatever they want because you're just fucking tired of dealing with their shit.
I agree with that.
Right on. So that would be one thing. And it looks like actually Zach Black's calling back in too, so let's get him up on here. Zach.
Well, gentlemen, sorry, my cell phone reception is shit over here on the beach.
Yeah, well, it's on the beach, man. We're not going to blame you for that.
Right, woe is me, right? I'm coming a river. So I'm just listening, man. I've been outside for trying to get online for a while, so I'm just catching up.
Right on. Well, we're pulling in yet another caller. Let me go ahead and get them on the air.
Hi.
Caller, you're on the news?
Hey, what's up? It's orgasmic, how about it? Yeah.
Hey, babe.
How's that going?
Welcome.
Thanks. This is a topic I have a lot of experience in too. I just got rid of a psychic vampire myself that I've been friends with for 2.5-3 years. So it was a horrible, horrible experience. Got to the point of a restraining order, coming down to my work, almost got me fired. It was really, really bad.
Who is this? Is this Lexi, by the way?
Yes. Yep, that's Lexi.
Oh, okay, cool.
Is there, what distinguished them to you as a psychic vampire?
The whole nine yards. I mean, if you read in the Satanic Bible, that whole chapter, the whole part about psychic vampires, every single line was this kid. Every single line. He would, give to you something and then immediately take it back from you. He would say, here, I know you need some help with this, and you don't have to worry about paying me back or anything, and he'd come back around. It got to the point where he was showing up at my work. He would harass me or my coworkers and my friends, and he almost got me fired because he would just be around all the damn time. Finally, the past 6 months or so, he came back from a job in Hawaii, and he started problems in my life again, and I told him, I cannot deal with you anymore. You are making me sick with stress. You're following me around. You're showing up at my house. You're causing problems. So I defriended him on Facebook, the whole nine yards, and I tried to get rid of him, let my bosses know. He turned around, called up Wicked Pup, started telling him all these stories, trying to get me and him to break up, started talking to my friends, saying untrue things about me. And finally, I had to tell him, if you keep doing this, I will put a restraining order out for you, and I will take you to court for slander. And he actually left me alone until about last week. He showed up at my work, and I just looked at him and I said, I can't serve you, and I walked away, and I haven't heard from him since. But it took me like 2.5 years to get rid of him, and it got worse before it got better.
Lexi, if I could point out something that you brought up, that's a moving story, by the way. Something you brought up earlier about this, you said that this guy would do favors, and would he also give gifts?
Yep. He would buy things for my daughter. He would come around and, play with her and stuff, which made me really uncomfortable because, he would make comments about, your daughter is this and your daughter is that. And eventually he also started giving me his, quote-unquote, advice about how I wasn't being a good parent because I was working all the time. And it just, it steamrolled into a whole bunch of stuff. Yeah, he would give gifts, and then, he'd be like, well, I helped you out, so you need to do this for me. And you can't, there was one time he got onto my Facebook, and he was like, we have to talk right now. And I'm like, Johnny, I work 10 hours a day. I have to take care of my children. I'm, dealing with being sick half the time, that I don't really have the time to talk right now. And he just blew up my Facebook, just cussing at me, yelling at me, telling me I was a shitty friend, and just being all kinds of verbal abusive.
Right. Now, I'm glad you brought that up. That's another thing I've noticed, too, gifts and debt, like giving and then feeling indebted, too. That is a classic psychic vampire trait.
I'd agree. I would actually have to state that
the story as you've related it definitely rings clear cut to me as to what a psychic vampire is. The type of stress that you were describing going through that this person just seemed to emulate as they were, within your vicinity. It was almost like the storm coming, or the breeze right before the storm, I should say.
Notice how you also got sick, too. I mean, that's another indicator right there. Your health, it starts to take its toll on your health.
And you know, my job, I started suffering at work, too. And it just, it affected all areas of my life. And it got to be way too much. I could not be
there. I've got to ask, did you ever consider kicking the nuts?
Kicking the nuts? Well, you know, there was one time last year I kind of wanted to get on out. And I didn't because he got to the point where he was, like, shaking violent. And he had actually taken his laptop and he was going to throw it at me. And I'm like, you know what? You're a dick. I'm leaving. So luckily I had a ride away from him that day, but... Even now, to this day, he goes to work and live and everything. So I always watch out for him.
Sean, you actually brought up something very interesting without directly stating it. Directness. You know, Sean, you're a very direct person, and what psychic vampires are counting on is indirectness.
Right. Well, I was thinking about what you said about manipulating the manipulator, and... you know, you can't get ridden if your back is straight. You have to bend over and play their game. If you're just like, no,
right.
You know what you want, and you just go, you know, sorry, just no deal.
Right.
Now, when you do the manipulating the manipulator, there is a part where you have to give a balance, but there is a way in which you can put it off until it works into your favor, and it's a very tricky. It's very tricky. You will be vampires. You will be drained a little bit. Be expected, if you're going to manipulate the manipulator, expect a little bit of draining on your part. But realize that you can control when and where, if you know how to do it right, that you get drained.
How about you just control when and where you kick them in the nuts?
That's a better option. But, you know, I'm saying, like, if you want to, I know, I'm leaving it up to whoever wants to play the game. If they want to play the game, let them play the game. If not... you know, kick him in the nuts.
It seems to be
like
this,
the more fun alternative.
That it is.
I'm sitting there kind of scratching my head on this because it gives, in some ways, the description here, well, obviously, is a parasitic individual, someone who, you know, who leeches off of you and drains you. So I'm wondering, like, sometimes, you know, to get a tick out of your arm, you have to, you know, light a fire under their ass. I'm wondering if that's metaphorically the same thing as kicking them in the nuts, like Sean's describing, or if there's more to it, if you could do something maybe a little more deceptive. And actually kind of feed poison into them instead.
Well, the poison that they, if you're going to feed anything, you feed nothing. You know, that's what they're calling upon. It's like when they give you a gift, they make you feel indebted to them. You know, the art of playing dumb is what Anton LaVey, I think, was his greatest contribution in dealing with them. Because if, you know, you act as if you don't see what they're doing, then... their game almost has no effect, because then when they call upon you and you say, oh, well, I thought that was just out of the kindness of your own heart that you did that. I mean, I had no idea. You know, you turn the game around. If you, you're like, okay, it is fun to kick them in the nuts, but if you do it, if they set themselves up to be the victim, then you're going to look like the bad guy. So sometimes directness is not always the best approach.
Now,
it can be fun.
Before we get going further here, guys, Dan Dredd's actually hanging on the line, so I'm going to throw him on here as well.
Rockin'.
Dan.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Hey.
Hey.
My favorite Canadian. What's up, man?
All right. I was just listening, and I thought I would share a certain perspective you guys haven't really touched on so much. So I'll be brief. I think what Anton LaVey was talking about in his essay, Not All Vampires Suck Blood, wasn't so much a method of identifying what actually constitutes objectively a psychic vampire, more than a process of being able to identify a factor that can hold you back from really being able to be the master of your own life, and what to do about it, right? Such as, like, you know, how a psychic vampire will latch onto you through guilt and sort of manipulate that to get you to do whatever it is that they want you to do. Being able to identify that as like a solid sort of cohesive thing that they're using against you frees you up to really just be able to drop it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, actually.
And it's subjective. What constitutes a psychic vampire is really subjective. You can't really objectify it. Like, for each person, it'll be different. Whatever you feel is draining on you, behaviors that other people will try to expect you to do this or that. Only you can really decide if that person is a psychic vampire or not, because, you know, you might be getting something from them as well.
Right, absolutely. See, and you have to determine, like, whether they're fulfilling some sort of balance in your life.
Right, but isn't this kind of like the Hand That Feeds by Nine Inch Nails?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. I actually kind of, with what you're saying here, Dan, you reminded me of something that I read by Gurdjieff. Gurdjieff talks about internal and external consideration. He talks about it being the thing that enslaves. When you consider yourself too much, or you consider the external people too much, one way or the other, in an extreme, it can be poison to you. It can enslave you to one particular influence or the other. Is really the way that he puts it. But what he, in my opinion, is talking about is when you will actually allow them to place that guilt on you that Matt keeps bringing up, or you allow them to make you feel like you have to contribute your vitality to them in some way. So I think that's very interesting that you brought up, actually, that the, you know, dealing with the influence of it on yourself rather than dealing with the person themselves. So
yeah, really, it's a it's one more chain in, like, in the, you know, massive myriad web of chains that hold us from manifesting our own will and becoming our own gods. But it's more of like a personal one, you know, like things we deal with in our personal lives, people that, especially family will expect you to say, do this, do that, show up for a family gathering, do this, do that, whatever, and browbeat you to hell if you don't. And being able to overcome that is a big step.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, okay. Sean, did you have something you wanted to say earlier? I thought I heard you get cut off. I mean, as the topic moved on, well, is there something you wanted to contribute?
Yeah, the advice you gave about playing dumb is actually in a Cialdini book, about the abuse of the principle of reciprocity, which is a principle of give and take, which, you know, helped primitive communities stay together, you know, and that's exactly what he says to do.
Interesting.
So that's definitely one good way. I think Dan Dredd's also kind of isolated another good way. If you remove a sense of guilt, the external sense of guilt or sense of responsibility for anybody outside of yourself, of course, less a child, then you're removing any option for that person to affect you. So I don't think at that point it really necessarily matters that you play dumb with them. You know, you just, whatever, you become intolerant to them, so to speak.
But then, Steve, you're not the only factor. I mean, I would agree to that up to a point, but there's also other factors to consider within a psychic vampire's game, is that if they make themselves look like the victim and you look like the bad guy, then they could turn even your own friends against you if you don't do it. In fact, in that same chapter, Not All Vampires Suck Blood, there's a key word that LaVey uses in not only playing dumb and accepting things, but doing things generously. See, if you carry things out with a certain act of finesse and generosity, if you learn how to say no but politely and justly, then their own game turns back on them. If you are directly, like we said before, like kicking them in the nuts, or if you just say, I don't feel obligated to you, they could turn that around and say, well, look what he's doing, and then pretty soon before you know it, other people could be turning on you that otherwise wouldn't.
Interesting. It's like playing the game versus playing the game and winning versus not playing at all are the two different perspectives. You're talking about
right. Winning
the game. I'm talking about abstaining from playing. I guess they're both viable methods of avoiding the vampire, so to speak.
Right. Right. And you know, and that's the thing too. I mean, Dan, we can all agree that you're an asshole.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. See, that's the thing. Some people do not mind being the asshole, and that's cool. Some people want to kind of, you know what I mean? I mean, I guess what you brought up is that there are two methods of dealing with the same thing.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm inclined to think that, I mean, most people who know me know that I can be a real asshole, and you know, they're expecting me to be the bad guy in most situations anyway. So to a point, I don't see any real threat in terms of, you know, letting them use whatever actions you've made. I'm getting a big echo here. Sorry, I'm not really sure where it's coming from. So, but what I'm saying is, you know, that it's not necessarily a bad thing to be the bad guy. If the people you really value know you well enough, they're already going to know that sometimes you are the bad guy. So,
that's a very good point.
Yeah. So I'm just throwing that out there because, you know, I guess it just helps me to finalize the thought here.
If people already think you're a lion and they know, you know, they're going to expect you to eat the occasional gazelle. So that just comes with the territory. Sorry to cut you off, buddy.
Right on. That's exactly it. And I think that's part of really living life according to your will. I think when you are concerned with what people outside of you think of you, then you're living yourself, you're moving yourself into a kind of a prison. You know, when you spend so much time worrying about what the external world or even your friends' impression is of you, you're not being genuine with them and you're not being genuine with yourself.
One step further, too, I could take it is that generally what I've found in my experience is as soon as you stop caring what people think of you and you just act the way that you naturally act, you'll find that people will generally like you more. And you'll generally get more respect than you would if you were kowtowing to their wishes and trying to be careful about what they think and their feelings. And that's what I found, anyway. The more you try to please people, the less pleased they're going to be.
That is very true. That is very true. In fact, see, that's the thing. Is what if by your own... I mean, the thing that I would... the argument that I would bring up in contrast would be, you know... Satanists work with nature, not against it. That's one of the basic givens of a Satanist. And what if it's in your nature to kind of like, you know, be a mediator, be not so aggressive, but also not so passive? You know, I think it's different. And I think that both approaches are valid. And, I mean, maybe you should care up to an extent. I brought this argument up before, like caring to an extent as opposed to... not caring at all. For example, like you're going to care about your boss's opinion of you, you know, because he's going to control whether you're going to get a raise or whether he's going to fire you or that sort of thing. So I think certain things, you know, certain things within their context, and that's the approach I take. Now, I mean, the direct approach is also extremely valid.
Well, I think that if it's your boss's opinion of you, then that's just a game piece to be played. But if it's actually your friend, you know, that's the disapproval may be that you're on crack. You know, it's a good time to listen then. Maybe.
Right. But I think it all stems also, you know, on having a healthy self-perception. And I guess that's really what I'm kind of going against versus, you know, basing. Let me rewind and start here. What I'm going against here, what I'm saying is that when you can look at what somebody else is saying about you and weigh it and measure with what you already know about yourself, you can really pretty easily recognize your own shortcomings. You don't have to disguise or guise anything about yourself. If there's something that's genuine in their opinion or their disapproval of you, it's going to ring true pretty quickly, and that's more of a matter of self-reconstruction than it is a matter of deceiving people outside of you. However, if you're so worried about what everybody else's opinion is of you that every move you make is one that's unnatural and uncomfortable, that's really draining, and then I think those are the kind of situations that psychic vampires really put you in. So, go ahead.
Ultimately, though, they only have the power that you give them. If you can sever that tie in your mind, and you realize that the game that they're playing, and you can see it for what it is, it evaporates. And that's when you no longer have a problem with psychic vampires, because they can sniff you out. They can sniff out victims.
Right on.
And to be honest, also to concur with what you said, Dan, the key is in, again, what LaVey brought up, is in saying no and learning to say no. And if you're the type of person that's been, you know, that's kind of that has a weak will and just kind of says yes and goes along with things all the time and doesn't know how to put their foot down, they can sense that, and that's what they pick up on.
Let me real quick also, because we only got about 3 minutes left in this show, guys. I want to address Matt's statement about caring what your boss's opinion is of you. I have worked for the company that I have worked for 11 years now, and I'm pretty successful, and I'm probably one of the top managers in the entire company, and there's over 200 managers in the company. I don't give a shit what my boss thinks about me, because my work performance, the quality of work that I produce, the bottom line, all justifies me being here. It doesn't matter that my boss can pop online and find out that I'm a Satanist. That doesn't matter to me. It's not anything of my concern. His opinion of me on a personal level has no place in the workplace, and I think most people who own businesses or manage businesses are aware of this. It's about the performance that's being made. So if you and your actions speak for themselves, regardless of what other people try to paint you as, you're not affected by, you know, the victim role that the psychic vampire might play you into, or, you know, if they let you martyr them, it doesn't matter. You're not affected by it. Everybody can come by you and tell you're an asshole, but you can, you know, just rest easily on the fact that it's been a constant your entire life that you are an asshole, and they'll sooner or later accept that and come back.
That's true. If you're extremely confident in what you do, then you generally don't have a problem. The ass kissers are usually the ones that don't really bring that much to the table, so they're trying to make up for it. But if you're extremely proficient in your job, then I'm the same way. I'm not going anywhere. I have satanic tattoos, and I'm pretty open about it. But nobody cares, because I'm really good at what I do.
Right on.
And you also brought up, really quickly, you also brought up the difference between professional and you know, personal. And I think that's the if it's affecting you professionally, that's when you have a problem.
Right on. All right. Guys, we got just about a minute left. I wanted to say thank you to both Hartnell and Dredd for calling in. I appreciate it. Lexi, you too. Zach, I still don't know why the fuck you're here on the ooze instead of down on the beach hitting on girls, but that's your bag, man. Tomorrow night, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we're going to talk about the stupid things that guys do to try to get laid. So nice. I'm hoping everybody will come out and check that out. with all that being said and done, if anybody else has something to plug, now is the time to do it.
Well, yes, I do.
I was on the ooze, yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, nice. Okay. Hey, don't forget to listen to the Devil's Radio this week. It's going to be badass. There you go. It's my plug.
Awesome.
Send me a link.
Right. And on that, yep, we'll talk to you guys next week.
Cool. Hey,